and to and if you are older brother, you're supposed to take care of the rest of the sibling. We have a parent, some of us build a house for the parent. Relationship is still very strong in terms of relationship in Cambodian community.
And they maintain tight communities in Portland. Pham Yun Lee says because the Mien are small in numbers, they support one another like a large extended family.
We don't have that many people, but we're all really close. We're helping each other. Like someone's losing family member, we all, the whole community come by, and they all pitch in the money to give the donation to this family to help them with the funeral expense and all that. You know, they buy them food. So how to help our community to stay strong? Today, I am worried about the younger generation now. They have too many things to learn about American culture, and I'm afraid that in the future, maybe the children doesn't know where they come from and what their ancestors are and background they're coming from. And not to forget about that. It's important for them to carry that on.
Carrying on traditions and preserving culture, giving back to their children and to their communities is the refugee dream for Southeast Asians in Portland. Ki Long Ong.
The fact that I was able to get through the Khmer Rouge and I was able to overcome the language barrier and the culture barriers and get to where I am today, a lot of times I look back, I look in the mirror, it's like, how did I get here?
Refugee Dreams Revisited by Anne Morin and D. May Roberts. You can find a flash movie about this piece on our website at crossingeast.org. I'm Margaret Cho, and this is Crossing East.
This was a special stage and studio presentation of some of the stories in the Crossing East Asian American History Series with host Margaret Cho. We've been featuring the music of Duran Cravan. If you want to hear the complete Crossing East series, you can order the CD set or downloads at crossingeast.org. And you can also order a CD of the music you're listening to. I produce the Crossing East series with Media Rights Productions and Sarah Caswell Colbert, Catherine Stifter, and Clark Salisbury. We had local funding from the Regional Arts and Culture Council, the Collins Foundation, and the Oregon Arts Commission. You can listen to this show online at stageandstudio.org or on our iTunes podcast. Till next time, I'm D. May Roberts, Stage and Studio.
You're listening to Community Radio,
KBOO, Portland.
Andy Warhol, Silver Scream, can't tell them apart at all.
My name's Joseph Gallivan, and you're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are Isla Rose and Kia Zora, two painters from Oregon, whose show We Are a Part is on now at the Red E Cafe in North Portland at 1006 North Killingsworth. The show runs through Friday, March the 12th. Thanks for doing KBOO Art Focus over Zoom.
We're happy to be here.
Yes, it's nice to meet you.
Yeah, so I should stress that Kia is in Portland and Isla is in Eugene, but the show is here in North Portland. This two-woman show, you paint similar styles or similar subject matter, but tell us a bit of the background because, you know, you have a sort of a bond that people don't know about. Why don't you start, Kia?
I'm originally from Eugene, and we knew of each other, you know, in different friend circles, but it wasn't until I think our early 20s where we actually met. We were both painting. I think Isla was in school for it, and I was just kind of doing my thing, but we would hang out, and we had a love and a connection of art. We often got mistaken for each other as well. We have kind of this uncanny connection in how we look, and we are both also multiples.
What's a multiple?
And, well, I'm a triplet with two identical twin brothers, and then Isla is a twin also,
mm-hmm. with a twin brother.
But you just, in terms of making art, what were the similarities you saw between your own works early on?
Both Kia and I have, maybe it's due to the fact that we've grown up in a very similar environment. I'm not totally sure, but we're both really drawn to nature and natural elements, and also a deep fascination with the cycles of life and observing them in the natural environment, and then considering how, you know, we are connected to that cycle and to nature. Just as we have synchronicities within the context of our personal lives, that was a synchronicity that we found in our work.
The subject matter for both of you is sort of very symbolic art. You know, there are lots of symbolic plants, animals, and then the human form is often a skeleton or a sort of a body that's been cut open or torn open, so you can see the anatomy. Isla, you have a series of three at one end of the Red E Cafe, and they're called Listening, and it's somebody in a sort of Buddha pose, you know, like they're meditating. And the first one, it's a guy with no shirt, and he's got headphones on. The next one, the figure is a skeleton with a sort of animal face. And the third one, it's a black silhouette of the same kind of figure. And in each one, they're surrounded by, I don't know, so many different plants, so many different colors. The second one, the sky is turning into faces, like ghosts are crowding in. And the third one, where it's a silhouette, the sky has gone kind of, you know, psychedelic. It's green, yellow, and pink. So who's doing the listening here? And what's the transformation within the three paintings?
Well, there's two parts to this answer. One addresses your first inquiry into why, you know, the content of bodies and humans being ripped open and often showing skeletal and anatomical images. And for me, a lot of times I gravitate to that, is to take the personal identity out of a subject so that it becomes something that we can all relate to, so that we can put ourselves into the natural cycle of the earth or of our environment and relate to it in a context beyond our own personal identity. And then within the context of those three paintings, that was exactly sort of what happened as I was painting it, because the first image, where it's a specific individual, he has an identity. It was actually commissioned by a Portland-based musician / band who wanted this image for their own poster and their own work.
Which band?
The band's name is Terrazoa, Terrazoa. They are electric pop, hip hop, festival kind of. So after I had painted that, a lot of it really resonated deeply with me, except for the individual having this very distinct identity amongst all of these natural elements. And so I wanted to do a couple of different versions where that individual, in the process of listening, because he has these headphones that are kind of plugged into the plants, in the process of listening, he loses his identity and kind of dissolves into the environment. And so I painted these two different versions sort of as an evolution of that concept. I painted the two additional versions beyond the actual portrait of him, but the next two were actually paintings done on top of Gis clay prints. So I had a print made of the painting itself at a certain point in the stage of painting. And then I made two of those prints and painted on top of both of them to achieve the second two versions. So I have them print it without coating it. If they coat it, then it's not as permanent. But if they don't coat it, then the paint, which is acrylic, adheres to the canvas not too dissimilarly as it would a regular canvas. It actually absorbs much faster, so it's a little bit more difficult because you don't have as much time to blend. It's something about the ink that they use to print. It becomes really absorptive to the water. It's permanent.
And then the form you've taken, all these plants are crowded up behind and in front of the person like a pyramid, and the actual top of the pyramid is a triangle. What is the symbolism?
Gosh, I've done so much research into symbolism that we could dig deep here, but essentially the pyramid has this grounded base and points up toward the heavens. And the very simple kind of idea that I would point at with that would be a listening to nature to seek a connection with some sort of higher power or spirituality. And the pyramid is kind of an arrow in that sense toward literal heights.
And then what, just to explain why the final one is a silhouette. You could have gone in other directions.
If you actually look closely at the painting, it's also a matte finish while the rest is kind of a gloss. And so it gets pushed into in depth in a way where it, to me, I think of it more as a void. It's like this empty space. I feel like when we meditate or we're in the flow, for example, while painting, we can touch into that space, and it's a very healing space where we can access, for example, through painting, information that maybe the mind can't readily access, or through meditation, maybe information about what the body needs. So I think of it more as kind of that state in which we lose ourselves in the act of being in flow or in meditation. And it can be a kind of psychedelic space.
I get ads on Instagram all the time for the blackest black in the world. You know, this, some artist who came up with this black paint.
That, yes.
Are you tempted to use that?
Oh, if I could have had access to that for that painting, I mean, that is literally what I thought of when I was painting that black in there, is that would have been the perfect black, because it's like a black hole of blackness.
Well, you know, as soon as you go on Instagram, you'll probably get an ad for it now.
Probably. It's frightening.
I've never seen this stuff. I can't wait.
Really? Well, you should read about the whole thing first.
Yeah, a little artist kerfuffle story.
Yep.
And then Isla, I want to just mention another one of your paintings. It's called Toward the Light, and it is two skeletons. One's lying down, the other one's got their hands over the skeleton like they're doing, you know, Reiki or giving CPR or something. And they're on an island on a pile of, what is that? Oh, it's all mushrooms. Okay, pink and gray. And then there's the three, what are they? The three furies, and three cloaked women pouring water from amphorae in the background. And then behind that is sort of neural network / tree / sea sponge. The palette is beautiful, pale turquoise and pink. Yeah, it's a lot more delicate than the first painting we talked about. So go on, explain the story, and then fill in the details.
Well, I actually started that piece maybe 10 years ago, just with the skeletons, and maybe just one skeleton. It just had the skeleton lying down. Then it set it aside forever. A friend of mine came and did all this scratchy, abstract blob paint all over the skeleton. And then I set it aside. I didn't know, you know, where it was going. And then I picked it up again this last year during COVID, actually. And I just suddenly knew where to take it. I think it came, the other skeleton came in, and it was like this healing was going on. You know, I can't always say exactly where the symbolism and things come from. Sometimes I'll wake up from my sleep or a dream and just suddenly know, or I'll be looking through a book and get an idea. And in this case, I think I felt that I had done some thinking about grief and grieving, especially in the times of COVID, and how to process grief so that it doesn't get trapped in the body or in our lives. And so I was thinking about that and symbols for that, like the pouring of water and the cleansing physical purification of the body that we do, you know, showering, bathing. And I'm not exactly sure where the tree and the fates, or there's several different words for, or different mythologies that have these three, you know, women. I don't know exactly where that came from, but it, I think it marks sort of a transition from one, say, from life to death, or they guard a passageway. I was trying to paint a prayer for an opportunity to heal, to process grief, and the tree growing up in the background is kind of like the tree of the Norns or the Fates that they're protecting or they're watering, and it is, like you said, like a neural pathway. So maybe the concept that in practicing processing grief, we are creating new neural pathways that help us access that healthy processing more quickly.
My name is Joseph Gallivan. You're listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week are painters Isla Rose and Kia Zora. Their show We Are A Part is on now at the Ready Cafe through March the 12th, 2021. Kia, I'm looking at a picture of yours, and it's called The Marriage Between Life and Death.
Oh, yeah.
It's actually, you have another one next to it in the show called Cyclical Nature. So this gives us a good sense of your style. The Marriage Between Life and Death. I'm looking at a zebra's head coming in from the top, and it's a skeletal giraffe on the left side, and they're facing each other, and then in between them is this sort of wild flora. Kind of, a lot of it looks like sea anemones. You know, there's a lot of aqua and pale blue in the background, so we could be underwater, or it could be just, you know, chrysanthemums from the supermarket. This is very lush, and two figures kind of float in space, and I was just wondering, you know, what are they doing? Are they communicating with each other?
Yes, definitely. They're in relationship of sorts. It's called The Marriage Between Life and Death, and oftentimes my work deals with this death idea and death analogy, and really interlaced with life. It feels like there's like a deep connection there between life and death that kind of keep everything going all the time around them. And there's this kind of inner and outer emergence. I think oftentimes you'll see like bodies kind of being splayed open, and you see the skeleton mixed with the live creature. And I do this to kind of symbolize the, I guess, inner and outer worlds that we're kind of always engaging in. I guess it's not only that like our physical bodies move through the world, but it's also, there's a lot of invisible activity, if you will, that communicates with our environment. I think about that a lot when I'm creating paintings. This was actually inspired by these two dancer friends. We've done a couple collaborations together in the past where I've painted, they'll be on stage dancing and I'll paint an interpretation in a couple different scenarios. We've done that, but we were coming up with some kind of classes or ideas to teach people. And so they started dancing and I started painting this. Mm-hmm. This giraffe skeleton emerged, and then this zebra idea came out. I kind of just started going with it. And this, I started this quite a while ago. The elements and the symbology, they just sort of emerge over time as I'll apply some color or some design to a canvas. And then I'll kind of step back and look and kind of wait for something to emerge, or like have a sudden idea and then go for it, try it out. And it's kind of like this back and forth dialogue, I guess, between me and the painting, that things just kind of emerge. And sometimes there'll be like this part that's not working, and I'll sit, I'll look at it, and I'll ask it what it wants. And then sometimes it'll be kind of an argument, and other times it'll be like, oh, aha, I got it. And I'll go to this place of tension in the painting and then develop it more.
You both talk about the sort of freedom of letting the ideas emerge. You know, you don't go in with a plan. But the execution in all your work is so deliberate and meticulous. It's just so beautiful to look at these works. They're just amazing technique. Your other one next to it, Cyclical Nature. This is a skeleton where their thighs have been dislocated from the hips. Otherwise, in a fetal position, surrounded by flowers, the skeleton's on a black background, and the flowers, they make a ring around the body. There are just so many different flowers in different colors. And oh, there's some snakes in the background, and the skeleton is holding, it looks like a heart, like a human heart. Does each flower have a particular symbolism to you?
Yeah, there are some, most of these flowers I've picked, well, I picked obviously all of them intentionally. Some is because the color wanted to be in there. But for example, the lotus blossom on the right-hand side of the painting behind the skeleton's back is, it symbolizes, you know, purity of mind and a healing kind of lightness. I started this actually quite a while ago also. I initially started the skeleton, gosh, maybe like 10 years ago, and I let it sit for a long time, and it kind of felt like it was like when I was ready to work on it. And as I worked on other paintings, it was kind of going to be like a cornerstone. So they exemplify like an, concept I wanted to convey in my art. So I came and went from this painting, but then finished it a couple years ago. It represents the cycle of life and death in this roundabout way. So you have the symbology and the things I represent kind of carry you around a skeleton, which is in the fetal position, and then holding a heart, which the heart is at the center of everything. Then you have this upper right-hand corner. There's kind of seed pods and decaying leaves kind of going off into back into the earth. And that, then you see that the lotus blossom, like the aftermath of the lotus blossom, the seed pods of that. And I think that also then kind of comes into this live blossoming lotus too. So there's like this relationship there between the alive and the death. And that relationship between life and death is that life, it needs death to kind of bring it through its cycle. And death needs life to bring it through its cycle. And it's kind of, you're never without the two in constant relationship with each other.
It's an amazing work. Could you both say whether you ascribe to a particular kind of set of symbols? You know, are you like Jungian in the way you look at things, or do you look at Joseph Campbell, or, you know, the Bible has symbolism for all sorts of things, snakes and apples. How do you draw, where do you draw the meaning for your objects from? Do you want to talk first, Isla?
Yeah, I would love to hit on that. It all started, you know, I've been creating art since I was a kid. And so never did I really understand why I was drawn to certain symbols or images. And I'm assuming Key is this way too. We're very intuitively pulled to certain things and hadn't thought about it much until you start painting it into an image, and then you hear what people see in it. And the shared experience starts to give meaning to these symbols. And then that creates a curiosity to research them within the context of mythology or religion, spirituality, and history. And so after painting for into my 20s, I started to do research into symbolism and have read Campbell and Jung and studied archetypal, you know, imagery throughout history. And so for me, the application is really in the combination of that study and what people have learned up to this point of symbols, and then my own experience of them, because I think that we each have our own what I call symbolic lexicon that comes from modern times, our personal experience, symbols that show up within the context of our own personal lives for us, dreams. So we each have a symbolic language, even in our own lives, speaks to us and our experience. If we pay close enough attention, we can tap into it. I think the symbolic language is ever shifting based on current times and historical context.
Kia, do you want to say a bit more about your own symbol system?
I love what Isla said about that, is we kind of develop our own symbolic lexicon. My own relationship with where my find my symbol and my like concepts to work with, it definitely emerges out of a really personal relationship I have with the world, with nature and color and dreams and other kind of more ethereal concepts. But I have read, I love poetry, and I love the transcendentalist poets and writers, and have like skimmed over some Jung, and I kind of pick little pieces and fragments from different books and things I read and find interest in that kind of inform like how I piece my own meaning of all of this together, you know, as well as like practicing yoga or meditation, you know, things come to me there, and I kind of, however it feels right and makes sense and inside my body and in my intellect is kind of how I form like why it's important to me to express.
So let's talk about psychedelia, because you both have a lot of mushrooms in your work. A lot of them look like psilocybin mushrooms. Isla, you have Calm Between the Storms. It's a woman looking down a river valley to a kind of moonlit ocean. She's a big python rising up out of her back or behind her. And then her whole back or behind her is all these mushrooms, these red cap mushrooms. And then near that is one of Kia's pieces, Mycelial Migration. And that's sort of goat's head character with the body ripped open and you can see the lungs. And then there's like chanterelles and then other mushrooms growing out of that. And the colors are pretty wild. I mean, both of these, I would call these surrealist paintings. They have that soft focus that, you know, a lot of surrealists have adopted since Dali. Tell me, you know, where do the mushrooms fit in? Do you want to start, Isla?
Sure. I would say that art came much before psychedelia for me. And then just out of the conversation about symbolism, starting to see and understand how symbols can connect us and can be a language started to show up when I would experiment as a young person with psychedelics, which I've never done extensively. And in my family, spirituality connected with nature and has always been really sacred. And so I look at my psychedelic experiences in a very sacred way. Once I started experimenting with mushrooms and now other psychoactive plant medicine and stuff, I started to see this same connection with symbols and also with patterns that repeat themselves in nature and also patterns that repeat themselves in my life. And I see a lot of potential for processing trauma and grief through these medicines in subtle ways. If they're taken in, you know, respectfully, they can show us our personal relationship with patterns and with symbols, and that can help teach us how to heal ourselves, I believe. So,
yeah, tell us about Mycelial Migration. Who's going where in this migration?
Yeah, that so the mushroom relationship in that piece it's kind of roughly based on this idea of, gosh, I don't know the names and I'm not going to sound very scientific, but some of like the first plant life that emerged out of the ocean, mushrooms or fungus gave them the capacity to use air out of water, like their lungs almost, their acted as a vascular system for them. So there's these two plants, or these a fungus and a plant that merge together, and it's I think it's in the wort family. You'll see like coming out of the water this representation of a wort plant, and then climbing up into the leg of this goat creature that then is kind of forms into skeletal, also kind of mycelial material that then continues up and grows into the lungs. So then it represents this idea that the mushrooms created our ability to be humans on land using breath in our lungs. Grief and lungs have a connection.
The blue-eyed goat has a yellow brick road kind of halo behind his or her head. What was that one about?
It represents this merging and connection with like a higher self, and meaning this golden kind of halo. It's almost like a more ethereal, not necessarily only landlocked physical creature, I suppose, that there's connection to the ethereal world in this halo.
Can I jump in on that?
Please,
I really liked Joseph's reference to the yellow brick road. It does have this strange cobblestone quality, and the yellow brick road is kind of this road traveled to beautiful, what's it called?
Wizard of Oz?
Yeah.
I love that.
Magical land or whatever. So it's kind of got that feeling. And maybe I like that we're talking about that in the same context as my painting, Calm Between Storms, because for me, that painting is sort of a self-portrait, and the mushroom and the snake are part of my symbolic language and my helpers, my spirit helpers, you might say. and they're on this road too, or this river, you know, and they're, the mushrooms are sort of this messenger or this helper.
Tell us briefly what, where people can find you on social media and on the web.
I am Ila Rose Art. So ILARoseArt. And that's, my website is ilaroseart.com. My Instagram is at ilaroseart. Everything is Ila Rose Art.
And mine is Piazora. That's K-I-A-Z-O-R-A at piazora.com and at Piazora on Instagram.
I would urge anyone in Portland to go see this show before it comes down on Friday, the 12th of March. It's pretty amazing work and very, not just beautiful to look at, but fascinating to think about. My name is Joseph Gallivan, and you've been listening to Art Focus on KBOO Portland. My guests this week were painters Ila Rose and Kia Zora. Their show, We Are a Part, is on now at the Red E Cafe at 1006 North Killingsworth in Portland through Friday, March the 12th. Thank you so much for doing Art Focus via Zoom.
Oh, our pleasure. Thank you.
Andy Warhol looks a scream, hang him on my wall. Andy Warhol, silver screen, can't tell them apart at all.
KBOO Portland.
Bienvenidos a un breve informativo en su estación comunitaria KBOO 90.7 FM. Hoy martes 9 de marzo del 2021.